Tonight, breaking news, the deadly church shooting in a small Texas town. A gunman walks in and opens fire, killing up to half the congregation and wounding many more. Ties to Russia, how one of President Trump's cabinet secretaries has kept his investments in a company with business connections to Vladimir Putin's family. NBC News exclusive, new developments in the Russia investigation involving the president's former national security advisor, Michael Flynn. Political shift, the big increase in the number of women running for office in this Tuesday's elections, and what's driving it. And built to last, the mail order homes still gracing America's neighborhoods almost a century later.
This is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. It was, as authorities describe it, an absolutely horrific crime. The nation's worst mass shooting at a house of worship. A gunman walked into First Baptist Church in the small town of Sutherland Springs, Texas, and opened fire. The pastor and his wife were out of town today, but the pastor's daughter was at the service. A woman at a nearby business told NBC News she heard rapid fire shots like the sound of a semi-automatic weapon. At least 25 people are dead. Half of the people who were in the building. At least a dozen more are injured and still in the hospital tonight. Law enforcement officials have identified the gunman as 26-year-old Devin Patrick Kelly from a neighboring county. We begin with Steve Patterson.
Tonight, residents living in this small Texas town stunned, trying to make sense of what's described as a Sunday service massacre.
It was rapid fire. It was just boom, 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 boom.
Authorities say the shooter, 26-year-old Devin Patrick Kelly, opened fire inside Sutherland Springs First Baptist Church. That's southeast of San Antonio. He was killed after fleeing the scene. Paul Buford's church is right down the road.
Well, I know everybody in there. I mean, our churches work together. We go to lunch with the pastor. We started praying for everyone that was involved in it.
The small congregation, including families with children, so many were rushed to hospitals by ground and air. The pastor's teenage daughter among the dead.
Ambulances everywhere. We got two air life copters outside.
Gary Matula works at a nearby gas station and heard it all.
I never thought it would happen here. I mean, this is something that takes place in a big city. It doesn't make any sense.
Neighbors close to the shooting in shock.
You never think something like this is going to happen close to home, you know. These people in small communities, they leave their doors open at night so that they trust people.
Tonight, investigators combing the scene for answers as flags fly at half-staff. A devastating blow in this close-knit community reeling from what's being called the country's deadliest shooting inside a house of worship. Steve Patterson, NBC News.
For more on the investigation, we want to bring in our justice correspondent, Pete Williams, in Washington, as well as in Sutherland Springs, Arzo Dost. She's an investigative reporter for KXAN, our Austin, Texas affiliate. Arzo, let me start with you. You're on the ground there. What can you tell us about the community and the devastating impact this will have on that church and the whole community?
Well, Kate, let me just set a scene for you. We are a few blocks from the church and the community center where family members have been gathering all afternoon. To say the least, it has been a very chaotic scene here this afternoon. Even up to 20 minutes ago, we were watching as families were rushing to the community center, which is near the church, trying to find out if their loved ones were involved in the church this morning. As of this morning, we've also learned that this is, as you mentioned, a very small community, about 400 population here. I talked to one mother who said, look, when someone has a baby, everyone essentially shows up to the hospital to congratulate them. And so when something like this happened, everyone knows each other, and they're all rallying together and really at this point trying to figure out who was hurt and who passed away. Kate.
And Pete, the gunman, what do we know about him? What are authorities looking at?
Well, Texas authorities, with the help of the federal investigators, the FBI and ATF, are trying to find out why this happened, but they have no idea yet, they say, though several officials tonight say they see no obvious connection to international terrorism. Police are preparing to search the home of Devin Patrick Kelly, the person law enforcement officials tell us tonight was the gunman. He lived in Comal County, not far from San Antonio. People in Sutherland Springs say he had relatives in that small community, but first responders have been so busy tending to the injured that they're just now starting to look into his background. Survivors of the church attack say the gunman fired a semi-automatic weapon, and tonight law enforcement officials say it was an AR-type assault rifle. A Facebook page said to be from Devin Kelly, which has since been taken down, showed a picture of such a weapon. This investigation will now be led by the Texas Department of Public Safety, Kate.
Pete Williams, Arzo Dost, thank you both. President Trump tweeted about the shooting in Texas from Japan, where he is at the start of an extensive swing through Asian nations. NBC's Kelly O'Donnell is on the ground in Tokyo. Kelly, this happened in the middle of the night, your time. How has the president responded?
Good evening, Kate. Well, Tokyo is 14 hours ahead of Washington, so President Trump likely woke up to the news of the Texas tragedy. His first comment came at 5 a.m. Monday morning on Twitter, where he writes, "May God bless the people of Sutherland Springs. The FBI and law enforcement are on the ground. I am monitoring the situation from Japan." The press secretary tells us he has called the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, and has been briefed several times. No indication yet that there'll be any change to the president's schedule. Japan is the first of five nations he's supposed to visit, including two long-planned summits. Of course, North Korea is on the agenda, along with meetings with Asian leaders and Vladimir Putin. Kate?
And Kelly, just hours after this church shooting, we're already hearing political statements, strong statements out of Democrats.
A number of Democrats, including Chris Murphy, the senator from Connecticut, where the Newtown tragedy happened, he describes it in very passionate words, saying the helplessness everyone feels has actually, in his view, been carefully cultivated by the gun lobby. He goes on to say to his lawmaker colleagues in Congress, asking them, is it worth the political support of the gun lobby if bloodshed endlessly flows in America's churches and schools and streets? Strong words from Chris Murphy. Kate?
Kelly O'Donnell, traveling with the president. Thank you. Another top Trump administration official is now under scrutiny for his relations with Russia. Leaked documents show Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross had business ties with a Russian company owned by Russian oligarchs, including Vladimir Putin's own son-in-law. Our chief foreign correspondent Richard Engel helped break this story and has all the details.
NBC News was given access to a trove of documents leaked from a law firm in Bermuda. They were leaked to a German newspaper and analyzed by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. The documents connect Secretary Ross to an oil company called Seabor, which is owned by Russian oligarchs, including this man, Kirill Shamalov, who is married to Putin's daughter.
I'm calling for a new investigation, at the very least, by the Inspector General of the Department of Commerce, that will tell us on the committee and tell the American people how we were misled if this information, in fact, was concealed, as appears to be.
Have you accepted the job?
Misled, the senator says, because during his confirmation, Ross, a billionaire investor, declared that he had divested most of his holdings.
You did it to avoid any conflicts of interest, correct?
That is correct, sir.
But the leaked documents show that Ross continues to own, through a series of shell companies, a stake in a shipping company called Navigator. And one of Navigator's biggest customers is that Russian oil firm Seabor, owned in large part by close associates of Putin, who were targeted by U.S. sanctions. Daniel Freed, a sanctions coordinator at the State Department under President Obama, says this all raises concerns.
Quite apart from whether it's a sanctions violation, like, it doesn't pass a smell test.
President Bush's chief ethics advisor agrees.
But that's an unworkable conflict of interest. He can't do that. He needs to choose between the shipping company and his job as Commerce Secretary.
In a statement, Secretary Ross said, no funds managed by his company ever owned a majority of Navigator shares, that Mr. Ross never met the three Russian oligarchs mentioned, and that he has been generally supportive of the administration's sanctions on Russian entities. Okay.
Richard Engel, thank you. And there is a new development tonight involving the special counsel's Russia investigation. NBC News has exclusive reporting tonight about the president's former national security advisor, Michael Flynn. We get those details from senior White House correspondent Kristen Welker.
General.
The legal vice may be tightening on President Trump's former national security advisor, Michael Flynn. Multiple sources familiar with the investigation tell NBC News federal investigators have gathered enough evidence to bring charges in their investigation of Flynn and his son, Michael G. Flynn. The elder Flynn was fired after just 24 days on the job for lying about his contacts with the Russian ambassador. Mr. Trump has downplayed any connections between Flynn and Russia.
I do think he's a fine man.
Under scrutiny, Flynn was paid nearly $34,000 to speak at a 2015 Moscow gala and seen sitting next to the Russian President Vladimir Putin while he was informally advising the Trump campaign. Sources indicate Special Counsel Robert Mueller is zeroing in on Flynn's lobbying work and whether he laundered money or lied to federal authorities about his overseas contacts and whether Flynn attempted to orchestrate the removal of a chief rival of Turkey's president from the U.S. to Turkey in exchange for millions of dollars. Sources confirm Flynn's son, who worked on the Trump campaign and briefly on the transition, could also face charges.
If Michael Flynn, the elder Michael Flynn, were to cooperate with investigators, that could both save his son and potentially limit any consequences that he himself faces.
It's the latest chapter in the Russia probe and comes after indictments last week of Trump's former campaign chair, Paul Manafort, and his deputy, Rick Gates. Also unveiled, former Trump volunteer campaign advisor George Papadopoulos pled guilty to lying to the FBI about contacts with Russian officials. Mr. Trump insisting Friday.
All I can tell you is this. There was no collusion.
Today, House Speaker Paul Ryan urged everyone to let the investigation play out.
We need to let these career professionals do their jobs, see it through. So, no, I don't think he should be stepping down. I don't think he should be fired. And the president's made it clear he's not going to do that.
Ty Cobb, the White House lawyer overseeing Russia matters, declined to comment on NBC's latest reporting about Flynn. Meanwhile, Manafort told the court he will put up more than $12 million in real estate and life insurance assets in order to avoid ongoing house arrest. Kate.
Kristen Welker at the White House. Thank you. Senator Rand Paul is recovering tonight after he was allegedly assaulted by a neighbor at his home in Kentucky. According to a criminal complaint, Senator Paul told the police that the neighbor, Dr. Rene Boucher, came onto his property and tackled him from behind, forcing him to the ground. A senior advisor says Paul suffered 5 broken ribs and is in considerable pain. The suspect was arrested and charged with assault, then released. In Saudi Arabia, dramatic moves as 11 princes, 4 sitting ministers, and dozens of former ministers were detained. The arrests appear to be the latest move to consolidate power by the young crown prince, who's next in line to lead the oil-rich kingdom. NBC's Lucy Kafanoff reports on the crisis.
It's a shakeup sending shockwaves across the kingdom and the world. Saudi Arabia detaining top officials in a sweeping corruption probe. Among them, one of the world's richest men, billionaire investor Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal, recently interviewed by CNBC's Andrew Ross Sorkin.
He has been the singular face of business and finance and relationships between Saudi Arabia and the rest of the world.
Known for his Twitter feuds with then-Canada Trump and purchases of large stakes in companies like Apple, Twitter, Citigroup, and News Corp. Some of the detainees reportedly held here, Riyadh's glamorous Ritz-Carlton. The arrests came just hours after the Saudi ruler, King Salman, created an anti-corruption committee led by his son, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman.
The stated goal is to root out corruption. There are others who are whispering about whether this is really about a consolidation of power.
The ambitious young prince, next in line to the throne, has been growing increasingly powerful, launching economic and social reforms aimed at modernizing the kingdom. Saudi Arabia tonight, a nation in flux. Lucy Kafanov, NBC News, London.
Back in the U.S., as we head to the polls on Tuesday, Election Day, there's been a big change since last November. Experts say far more women are on the ballots this year. NBC's Katie Beck went to Virginia to take a look at one race there.
This is incredible. This is one of my favorites.
Emily Brewer likes her wine and her politics red.
Sometimes wine fits the season.
This election season, when she's not talking ballots, she's talking policy.
Nice to meet you.
Hi, Emily. How are you?
Delegate.
Running for Virginia State Delegate in District 64, a lifelong resident and Suffolk wine shop owner who's watched the small business economy struggle.
I feel like rural Virginia really gets the shaft. I think that people don't pay attention.
For the 33-year-old, a win Tuesday would make her the youngest Republican female ever elected to the Virginia legislature.
I think it's time. I think that it's exciting.
It's time for rising numbers of women across the country and party lines. Since 2016, a surge of first-time female candidates storming the political arena.
We're seeing well over twice as many women now talking about running in 2018.
With 52 women on the ballot in Virginia, a 60% jump from the past two elections.
Another interesting aspect in this campaign is that while Brewer and her opponent remain far apart on the issues, here in small town Suffolk, they run their campaigns across the street from one another.
Now let's let this be the beginning.
More interesting, her opponent is also a woman running for the first time.
I never thought that I would do this until I went to the Women's March in Washington, D.C.
57-year-old Air Force veteran and trial lawyer Rebecca Cola feels women's rights are under attack.
All right, let's go get some doors knocked.
Her brigade hitting doors between cotton fields, Trump country in 2016, where odds favor a Republican.
There's a 100% chance a woman is going to have this seat. Is that a victory whether you win or lose?
I think that's a victory whether I win or lose because it's a change.
Both women say the race has stayed positive. Perhaps of all that's different, respect for one important similarity.
And we got to start standing up.
Katie Beck, NBC News, Suffolk, Virginia.
Still ahead tonight, could an innovative solution in one corner of Puerto Rico be a model for bringing back power to the entire island? 46 days after Hurricane Maria, more than 60% of Puerto Rico is still without power. Gabe Gutierrez reports that now some are asking whether solar technology could be the answer to one of Puerto Rico's longstanding problems.
In Puerto Rico, these are what shattered dreams look like. A mammoth solar farm decimated by Hurricane Maria. And across this beautiful island, miles of mangled power poles. It's very hard, Consuelo Burgos says. She and her husband have been without power for 46 days. So imagine the skepticism at a children's hospital in San Juan when it got a call from a tech giant with a bright idea.
Did it sound too good to be true?
Yes.
Juliana Canino Rivera is the administrator at El Hospital del Niño, now outfitted with more than 700 brand new solar panels, thanks to Tesla. The facility houses 35 children with disabilities like cerebral palsy. After the storm, the power was out and fuel for generators was nearly impossible to find.
It was chaos.
It was chaos.
Now, they are grateful for Tesla's donation. The company's founder, Elon Musk, calls it the first of many solar and battery projects going live on the island.
We have to reinvent life as we know it.
But reinventing life by going solar won't be easy. Puerto Rico's publicly funded electric company went bankrupt in July after a long history of corruption allegations. And there is still sharp opposition to privatizing the aging power grid. Ángel Figueroa Jaramillo, the president of the Electrical Workers Union, says that while solar technology should be studied, it will be difficult to implement on a wide scale. But for this hospital, at least, it's a perfect fit.
We're a tropical island. We receive sun 365 days a year.
An island shattered, but not broken. Gabe Gutierrez, NBC News, Humacao, Puerto Rico.
And we will be right back. In case you missed it, this was the scene in Houston after a woman dropped her Astros hat seven stories while watching the team's World Series victory parade from a parking garage. And as you can see, another kind of team spirit kicked in as fellow fans tossed the hat from floor to floor to floor until it landed back where it came from. One final catch after a great season. And just 5 days after a deadly terrorist attack here in New York, tens of thousands of runners competed in the New York City Marathon this morning. Protected by a massive security effort, there were no major problems reported. And for the first time in four decades, an American, Shalane Flanagan, crossed the finish line first among the women. When we come back, on the hunt for some unique American homes that come with their own page of history.
So look what I found in the
Finally tonight, house hunting is taking on new meaning these days as a devoted group of home historians searches out relics of a real estate past that came out of a catalog. Kevin Tibbles tonight on houses that were built to last and have.
Once upon a time, this is how we shopped.
This is about an important part of American history.
You could buy almost anything out of the Sears catalog, even your home.
So this house in 1926 cost $2,950 from Sears.
In a box.
Boxcar.
In a boxcar.
And the mortgage was $15 a month.
Andrew and Wendy Much really do live in a Sears kit house. Purchased from a catalog and shipped to the original owner 91 years ago. They are now dedicated kit house hunters, seeking out and helping to preserve these unique American homes. Some 370 different models were made available from 1908 to 1940. They say as many as 50,000 are still standing. Every brick, nail, board, and window, all sent along with 75 pages of instructions. All you had to do was assemble it.
Are there any telltale signs that this is a Sears product?
This is a doorknob hardware from Sears catalog.
This is the original.
Ron Salo was born here in this very house. That's him on the porch back in the 1920s.
What do you think of the craftsmanship in the house today?
Wonderful. I mean, the plans came with it were excellent.
Hi.
Rinna and Tom Taylor have researched the history of their kit home with the Much's help. For them, it's a bit of nostalgia coupled with the American dream.
I'm a child of immigrants, and it's so beautiful that I can own a piece of the history of this country.
But buying a home that comes in a box, would it work today?
I couldn't build this house.
Yeah, me neither.
We can do IKEA.
Who knows? Maybe the eBays and Amazons are already on it. Kevin Tibbles, NBC News, Novi, Michigan.
I even struggle with IKEA. That is NBC Nightly News for this Sunday night. Lester Holt will be in tomorrow. I'm Kate Snow reporting from New York. For all of us here at NBC News, have a great night.